Previously on Talk to Dad.
I'm starting to get a little bit sick of waffles.
Yeah. But more important, not to lick people's face while they're talking to you.
Don't be like Venus.
That's a lot of skee ball.
Chuck E. Cheese anarchy, where a kid can really be a kid.
Karaoke singing is causing the pandemic to spread.
But it took a global pandemic for us to find a solution to the karaoke problem.
If you tear it apart and you squeeze it, the stuff in the middle kind of oozes out like a wound.
Nice.
Huh.
Talk to Dad.
Hello and welcome to the Talk to Dad podcast, episode 218.
Hello. Got
Will here with me and Henry also.
Hello.
How's it going, boys?
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Last week on the podcast, as everyone just heard, William mentioned that he was getting kind of tired of waffles.
I mean, I'm not
pretty much every week in a row, except for maybe weeks when we were out of town.
They're not like disgusting.
We've had sourdough waffles. They're really good, but
I don't mean to complain too much.
You get tired of just the every single week, every Saturday morning.
Yeah, so we had pancakes.
So this morning we had sourdough pancakes.
They're pretty good.
Yeah.
And it's not that
they're
far
actually,
from a waffle.
Honestly, I think my opinion has changed on this. I think I like pancakes more because they're so much easier to handle, I feel. Like,
well, I mean, I might just be more used to waffles now.
I think these pancakes were pretty good. They were nice and fluffy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I like them both. I like waffles a lot. I think on the whole, I might like waffles better than pancakes, but we can mix it up a little. They're similar.
I forgot that,
these were pretty good pancakes.
I did forget that pancakes do actually have, some stuff that waffles don't have. Like, they actually do have, a consistency of cake.
Oh, yeah. And I feel like
it's like a cake you bake in a pan.
Yeah, something like that.
Also, the shape of waffles makes it really hard to, cut and eat, whereas with pancakes, it's just, flat, so you can just cut it, and it's much softer.
It's easier to spread the syrup.
Yeah.
I think there's still more stuff to do with waffles, though.
Oh, and also, you need a waffle iron to make waffles, so it's also another thing that pancakes has over waffles.
I don't know. I mean, they're both good. They're very similar, and what we had this morning was pancakes. I don't know what we'll do next Saturday. It's a week away.
Yeah.
It's a Saturday afternoon right now as we're recording this podcast. Pandemic update, it's still happening.
Oh, yeah. Yep. There is still a global pandemic.
Just in case you didn't notice.
Yeah, I don't know if you didn't notice. But
for a vaccine someday that will allow us to go back to our normal lives.
Yeah.
But for now, yeah. Speaking of the pandemic, we did something that we have not done for the whole pandemic this week for the first time. We went and saw a movie at the movie theater.
Oh, yeah.
I mentioned this last week that we were thinking about doing it. Maybe even the week before but we finally did it.
Basically, what we did is we rented an entire theater, which was surprisingly cheap.
And
to watch
sounds
a movie.
Like that sounds like to use the kids' lingo. That sounds like such a weird flex.
Yeah,
we're gonna rent the whole movie theater.
From what I've heard, it was only $75.
It was $75 exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is just a recognition, I think, by the movie chains.
And you don't have to pay.
No one's coming to movie theaters unless they can do something special like this.
Although, you didn't have to pay. That, covered the tickets, too, though, I think.
That was the tickets. Yeah.
It was really
the whole thing. So, I think we could have invited up to, 10 or 15 people, but there were only four of us in the whole place.
It was really nice to see. I guess I can call Tenet a summer blockbuster since it was originally supposed to come out then.
Let's talk about the experience of watching the movie first, and then let's talk about the movie next. So we kind of did it the last minute. We were thinking about doing it. We thought about doing it last week, but you had your thing we talked about on the podcast where you weren't feeling very well. And so this week everybody was feeling well. So Monday night, the movie showtime, we actually were able to get on and get a movie theater, choose what movie you want to watch.
Which normally, for a movie that's made by a director like Christopher Nolan, normally you cannot do that.
Yeah, we pulled up. Now, granted, Monday is never a big movie night anyway.
Well, yeah.
But the parking lot was as empty as I've ever seen it. Usually you have to park kind of far from the doors because it's just really crowded. It was the parking lot was empty. That was first clue. And then we walk in there and there's hardly anyone there. And in fact, I think like we saw like three or four employees, and that was more than we saw like any moviegoers at any one time.
Yeah, I think I saw like one, maybe two moviegoers as...
Yeah, we saw a few other people, but they obviously they weren't in our theater and they were just sort of spread out.
And I will say there is kind of... Like, there is kind of something to be said for, like, when you go to, like, a huge blockbuster and, like you have a crowd watching it with you, because sometimes, like, they'll all, like, laugh or, like, they'll get super silent or whatever.
Yeah, it was almost, in a way, in a weird way, it was sort of like watching a movie at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though we were in a big theater with the, you know, the big screen and the massive, like, sound system, but there wasn't, you didn't get any audience reaction because we were the only audience.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there was nobody there, basically. The movie concessions were actually discounted. So the...
Oh, wow.
We did buy up popcorn and drinks, but it was, like, cheaper than it normally is, which is always really expensive anyway.
These are crazy times to live in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we go in there, and, of course, we're the only ones in there. And I took a picture of, like, the empty theater. They had a lot of signs throughout the theater. I don't know if you noticed. And they did, like, a little... video in front of the movie talking about like all of the different sanitation they're doing. Mm-hmm. I noticed in the bathroom. Did you guys go in the bathroom?
I did.
They had like social distancing at the urinals. I don't know if you noticed that. They had like every other urinal was closed off so you couldn't be standing next to someone.
Didn't notice that.
Yeah. They mentioned that like all the theaters are like sanitized in between shows. They come in and like mist them. I don't know. Everyone who was working there was wearing a mask, which is only appropriate. I don't know. I felt like it was pretty safe because we weren't around other people.
Yeah.
If I went to a movie where even if they had social distancing, but they were still like, you know, the movie was it was full to the extent they can for social distancing. I don't know if I'd be comfortable because you're still like in a room where other people are like breathing and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, that stuff stresses me
out. But it was pretty empty. I think even if we hadn't have rented out the whole theater, it was so empty that probably if we would have just bought tickets, it would have been mostly empty anyway.
I had to like figure out.
But we didn't want to take any chances, so.
I had to like figure out which lines were supposed to be funny on my own.
Yeah. Well, and so now let's talk a little bit about the movie. I do think if you're going to watch that movie, watching it in a theater is definitely a different experience because one thing is Christopher Nolan's movies are really loud.
Yeah.
He uses like the sound system as much as possible and not just the sound effects. Like obviously there were lots of explosions and gunfire and things like that, but also
like the music.
Yeah. Inception. The score was really loud.
Inception had the,
and this had a similar score that it was like that. Like the score I think was supposed to feel kind of unsettling.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the movie?
I really liked it overall.
It was really, really good, but really, really confusing. Basically like Inception. It's like a newer Inception.
Except way more confusing than Inception, I thought. Because Inception, like, you understand.
Yeah, I guess.
For me, I understood, like, what the plot was. It's not like I didn't understand the plot. I just didn't understand like how all of the weird rules were supposed to work.
Yeah, that was weird.
And I'm not sure I ever will.
But I feel like that's kind of generally my experience with Christopher Nolan is like, I usually never really completely understand it on first viewing, but okay. I still really like it.
Without spoiling anything, I'd like to say that like throughout the movie, like it just blows your mind. Then it blows your mind right after that. Then it just keeps on going. Yeah.
So the action sequences are really great. Like, as you would expect from a Christopher Nolan movie.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, it was just like one after another. The way I've explained it to some people is it's kind of like James Bond mashed up with Doctor Who.
Yeah.
So you have like a lot of the Doctor Who kind of weird science fiction, like
time travel stuff.
Time travel sort of stuff and saving the world and saving the universe. And you have to like figure out something to do that. Mm-hmm. And so that's the Doctor Who part. And then the James Bond part is like, it's this international spy show kind of. Yeah. And the main character who's played by John David Washington, who by the way, does not have a name. Did you notice that? He's just referred to in the script as the protagonist. Oh, yeah. They never call him by name in the whole movie.
Yeah,
so the protagonist is like the super spy and he's like good at fighting and he's very smart and he's dashing and it's like,
wait, Oh, wait, man, I just realized that he never had a name.
Yeah, I noticed that when I read a movie review after, but yeah, they never mentioned his name. And he was good. I liked John David Washington. It's funny because we had just watched, as a family, we had watched Black Klansman, which he is in. Yeah,
he's a good actor.
And so I kept thinking about that movie watching this because, in a way, it's weird because even though the movies are totally different, his character was a little bit similar in some ways. I don't know.
Yeah, basically.
Because he's like charismatic and kind of, I don't know, gets what he wants.
I think it's safe to say that like all of us really like time travel stuff.
Yeah.
That's like fun stuff.
Although I had a hard time wrapping my head around. I got the basic gist of it, but I had a hard time wrapping around like exactly what was going on at one point in time. And they don't really stop and explain it. In fact, there's a part at the very beginning when they're introducing, so a lot of it, and I don't think this is spoiling anything, because I think it's even in the trailer, is around this concept of like inversion, where there's things as a matter of like theoretical physics will like be going backwards relative to us. So like a bullet that like goes from like wherever it ended up back into the gun.
Yeah.
And the scientist is explaining it to John David Washington's character, the protagonist. She even says,
like, don't try to understand it.
Yeah. And I think that was like on purpose. Like, yeah. This movie's going to be crazy. Apparently, don't try to understand.
I mean, time travel never completely makes sense in movies.
I think they briefly mentioned that it was probably sent from the future, which is also weird. I don't know.
Well, they do. And I don't want to spoil it too much, but that part was pretty clear.
It's very confusing. Like, it was sort of a
battle between the future and the present.
But like throughout the movie, I was like hurting my brain trying to figure out like what it would be like to battle someone who's fighting in reverse.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I think it would work, but...
But there were a lot of cool special effects where, like, you know, when they start using this concept of inversion in the movie, then you get to see, like, something happen one direction, and immediately after you see it happen in reverse, and it's kind of, like, cool. Like,
my favorite scene from it will be, like, this one fight with, and they, like, come back to it, this one fight with, like, these different army soldiers who were in reverse. Yeah. And they like call back to that in a really cool way. I think that could be like the hotel hallway scene from Inception of this movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was a lot of really cool visual effects, a lot of cool sound effects. The movie as a whole, I'm not totally convinced it makes sense.
Yeah.
But it was fun.
I'm going to be honest. I don't think Christopher Nolan makes like super like deep philosophical movies. I think he just makes like really fun and really crazy movies that I really like.
Yeah, it's funny because there's like certain things. You know what it means to be an auteur?
I do not.
So, like in movie criticism, an auteur is someone who like they have. So, auteur theory is like each director is their own like individual artist, and they have like a signature, and they have certain things that happen in all their movies. And you can take all of Christopher Nolan's movies, including like the Batman movies, and they have like certain themes, or they have certain, like, the main character has certain characteristics, or like they always use the same actors. And he's definitely an auteur. Like, there are certain signature things. Like,
okay, Michael Caine.
Like you mentioned, there's always either a mother who has been killed, or a woman who has been killed or injured or threatened by a man.
Yeah,
is like a part of every Christopher Nolan movie.
Michael Caine is in every single Christopher Nolan movie, even when he's not like a major character.
Yeah, not everyone, but most of them.
But he has like a 30-second scene in this, just because like
Michael
Caine.
It's obligatory.
I was thinking about that afterwards. I was like, they totally didn't need to have him in there, but they did because Michael Caine has to be in
really like Michael Caine.
You can't just not use Michael Caine.
Yeah,
who would do that?
But I think there was like I logged this movie on Letterboxd, which is just a site where you can just like rate different movies and log them and stuff. Uh-huh. And I think I saw that there's a lot of like really high art, like, moviegoers who hated that movie and said that it was his worst yet.
Oh, really?
So it's not, like, it's not super, like, deep, and, like, it does kind of not make any sense, but I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
it is pretty good. Oh, it also had the actor from Yesterday, so that was fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he played one of the operatives that are, like, fighting this battle to save the world.
It was a really good cast.
Actually, I thought that Robert Pattinson was really great in it.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. He's cool. And you don't really... All of the characters in the movie, you don't really find out that much about their backstory. There's not a lot of like dramatic backstory. It's just, here are the characters. They're in these crazy situations. Let's see what happens. But I thought Robert Pattinson was really interesting, and his character has a cool little twist at the end.
Wait, which one's Robert Pattinson or Patterson?
He was the guy that was helping John David Washington's character kind of throughout the movie. And you're never really clear like how much he knows about what's going on. And at one point he says, well, I'm not going to explain it to you because it's better if you just don't know. But then at the end you find out he actually knew more than... Anyway, yeah. I don't want to spoil too much.
I might enjoy it on like second viewing because then I might kind of understand a bit more what's going on. But overall, I gave it like an 8.5 out of 10.
I do feel like if I watched it again, I'd be in a better position to understand if it made sense or not. Because the first time you're like, I don't know what's going on and no one's going to explain it to me. So I'll just sit here and watch the explosions.
It was so nice to have.
Yeah, that's just all Christopher Nolan movies.
It was so nice to get to go to Blockbuster like that, though.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. I mean, that was really the only movie that's come out recently that I thought, you know, feels like a movie that you should watch in a movie theater first, you know?
It was probably going to be a summer Blockbuster at some point. Yeah.
And I think everything else that's been like that, they've delayed. So, like, I think another movie that's going to be like that is the new Wonder Woman movie. What's it called? Wonder Woman 1985, I think.
85?
Is it 84, 83?
I don't know. 84, 85.
Whatever it is. That looks like a movie that you really kind of need to see on the big screen or else, I don't know, what's the point?
There are people saying that Tenet would just never come out.
Yeah,
but it did.
And I think it's a little hard to tell like if it's a disappointment or not just because the situation is so strange for it to come out because, you know, we saw it, but we saw it in an empty theater. And I think a lot of people that have seen it in either empty or mostly empty, which is totally the opposite of how usually a movie like that is, you know, you sell out the whole theater for at least the first few weekends, right? Mm-hmm. But it's strange.
I don't think it seemed like a movie that was like ruined by like development issues, though. I thought it was great.
So anyway, would you recommend the movie?
Yes.
I would absolutely recommend it.
Okay. It was fun. It was fun to just go out and see a movie and eat popcorn and then come home.
Yeah, it was very refreshing.
Although we've watched a lot of movies at home, it was just a little different. It was fun, but at the same time, it was also strange. And it did remind me that this is strange times we live in. It wasn't the same as it used to be watching a movie, but it was still fun.
We still watch like the exact same amount of movies, like with or without the theaters. Like my ranking of every movie I've seen this year on Letterboxd is like 30 movies, I think.
Yeah.
We still watch a lot of movies.
So you can...
Not every movie of this year that you've seen. Okay.
Yeah.
We could have actually done it cheaper if we would have watched like an older movie. So like for the night, for a weeknight. For weekends are more expensive, but like for a new movie, it was $75. For like an older movie, like a classic movie. Have you guys seen Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yeah, we have.
Yeah.
Well, you could see that movie for like $50. For like, you can have the whole theater and watch it for $50, which seems ridiculously cheap, especially if you're inviting like a bunch of your friends. Well, not a bunch, but like, you know, five of your friends.
It was still nice to see an actual 2020 movie. The only other 2020 movies we had seen was Weathering With You and Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
I don't know why we saw Sonic.
And if you don't count like movies we've watched on or like streaming, because Onward, I think, was a 2020 movie. We watched that.
That was actually pretty good.
Yeah. What else is going on? You boys have been talking about, you've got a video game project going on. You want to talk about that?
Oh yeah. That's been a lot of fun. So I had an idea for, this was originally going to be like a solo project. And then I was like, okay, maybe I'll get like a friend or two to write a soundtrack. And then we just decided to like form this like development group called Old Seal Games for it. But,
what's the reason for the name Old Seal Games?
Oh,
I honestly don't know, or I think they know, but I
so
William seems like he knows.
I'm trying to think of a like a short way to say this. So in sixth grade, one of my friends who's involved in it made a character called Ben the Old Seal, but and he like made this seal, like he put it in a couple like scratch projects in a game called Five Nights at Jason's back when we were all obsessed with Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah.
And then like people started like making these like seal republics that would like battle each other at lunch, and then the republics turned into societies and got super complicated and got over 100 members and stuff like that. Really, really, really long story. But we're like calling it Old Seal Games because that's like what started everything.
So it's like a reference to the first game he ever tried to make.
Yeah. We joke that it's like what brought our friendship together, and also what tore it apart, because there's actually some drama that got involved in that.
So tell us about the new game that you guys are working on.
So it's called Android Circus. Kind of the premise behind it for me is it's this puzzle horror game. We decided it wouldn't have any jump scares. It'll just be this like atmospheric puzzle horror game about there's all these androids who have been they used to be these performance robots, but I guess the people behind the company just no longer needed them, and so they just tossed the androids into a warehouse, and now they're kind of breaking down in the warehouse. And you play as just a mechanic who just he's just visiting the warehouse just to grab a few things and get out. But the problem is all the robots are going completely insane within the warehouse, and there's all these problems and stuff.
And he's got to deal with that.
Yeah, there's
and try to survive and escape. Is it a survival game?
We're thinking it will be kind of we think it might kind of have the same progression as one of those Nancy Drew CD games. Obviously, when you grab your three items and the game completes, but I'm guessing you also, we're planning that you also try to help some of the robots escape the warehouse. The villain, I think, is going to be this crazy, the villain is trying to turn the warehouse into this basically human torture chamber, so that any mechanic who goes there,
that sounds dark,
will be killed.
Yeah, it does sound pretty dark.
Does it have a storyline? You find out more about it as the game progresses.
I think it basically. Does. I don't know much. I'm just the terrain designer.
So what are each of you doing, Henry?
Okay, so I'm making different layouts for different rooms and stuff, and I think I'm also helping with some of the coding. So it's going to be 3D, but there's different perspectives that you can it's point and click. So mm-hmm. we would just take screenshots of 3D environments, and I'm mapping out those 3D environments and doing some of the coding. I think Will's doing story coding, a bunch of other stuff.
So we decided that within old Seal Games, we made a Discord for it and everything. We could have different games that kind of had a lead developer, or kind of a head of it. And I'm kind of the head of this one.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'm doing kind of the main story, kind of just organizing it all together. And some of the art and programming. I have a friend who did the credits theme, the title theme, and might do a theme for the teaser trailer. And I have another friend who...
By theme, you mean music?
Yeah. And I have another friend who's going to do the actual in-game soundtrack. Some
are
of them
you
are going to
do any
of
the music?
No, because I don't want we don't want three different people involved in the music.
Yeah.
But some of us are... There's different people who are kind of helping with the story, too. It's been a lot of fun, organizing it and everything.
Yeah, I also might... I just remembered this, but I also think I'm making an inventory system or something.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's going really good so far. Two of my friends actually made this, they started working on the title screen. That looks super cool.
Mm.
I'm still drawing. We decided it'd be 2D animated because then we could, actually get stuff done and wouldn't take forever.
Mm.
But yeah. I'm, drawing some of the robots for it and stuff. It's been really fun to make so far.
That sounds fun. So, how long is this whole project going to take? Do you have any idea?
I mean, I think it would be cool if it got released around, maybe winter 2021.
Yeah.
Also, it'd be cool if we had, a trailer around Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
By winter 2021, do you mean this coming up winter or the winter a year from now?
Probably, winter 2021.
Starts in 1 year and ends in the next year. That's
January, February, hopefully.
Okay. So
oh, that's pretty soon.
I mean, I don't actually really know when it could come out, but
that's very soon.
Yeah.
For an entire game.
I don't know. I really have no idea.
Anything else exciting going on? School continues to happen.
School is happening.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't have anything to describe school.
Are you used to going to school with everyone wearing masks by now?
Yeah. I mean, if you haven't gotten used to wearing a mask around by now, then...
I'm going in person sort of soon, in a couple
of
weeks.
Do you know when that starts?
I don't know.
A few weeks.
Doesn't that start next week for you?
Does it?
I thought it did. Maybe it doesn't.
I don't think it's next week.
Ah, okay.
I don't know what it is, though. For sure. Mom probably knows. She's like the keeper of the schedules and everything.
Yeah.
It'll be weird not to have you boys around the house like during the day, like just me and Mom at home, because I'm still working from home. I did go into my office. I had to go because my laptop died on me. Like, I was going to do a little bit of work. Sometimes I do this where I'll finish my work day and then we'll have dinner and I'll watch TV or something or hang out with the family. And then like late at night, I'm like, oh, I remembered something I forgot to do. And so I'll like fire up my laptop at like 11 or 12 o'clock at night just to get something done. And I fired up my laptop, but it like wouldn't load. It wouldn't boot up. And I kept getting do you know what the blue screen of death is? BSODs.
Is your laptop that
which
old?
Is always a bad sign. Well, it's got it had Windows 7 on it.
Okay.
Which Windows 7 doesn't get the blue screen of death as much as like the old Windows MS-DOS or old Windows.
Yeah. We had a Vista
to.
For a while.
It's kind of like if you see it now, it's even worse. You're like, oh, something's really gone wrong if you see it now. And it was and it would say like, well, do you want to reboot normally or reboot like and try to repair the situation? I was like, oh, I'm just in trouble here. And then I had to go into the office because that's where like the tech support people are. And I found a tech support person and he was like, oh yeah, this is bad. This is not good. But it took like, it actually, we were able to get it to boot up, but it took like 3 hours to boot, which it should normally not take that long. Normally it should be much quicker than that. It was an older laptop and I was due for an upgrade, but I didn't want to upgrade it because I didn't want to like potentially lose something. And then my whole laptop went down, but he helped me. Like once we finally did get it to boot up, he like created a new laptop for me and we were able to move a lot of the files over from my old laptop to the new laptop.
Okay. Wait, he like made the laptop?
Yeah. Well, they build them. I mean, if you work like in a corporate environment, it's like, they know which particular software you're supposed to have, like depending on what part of the company you work on, and they load it up for you. He didn't like build it like with a screwdriver or anything. He just like got a laptop and he installed all of the software it needed, and you know.
So you got Did you get like a free upgrade?
Well, it's not my laptop. It belongs to the company, but it's a newer laptop. It's a brand new laptop, and it works so much faster. And I realized like that my old laptop was really not that great because now like I'll click on something and something immediately happens. I'm like, wow, that's what's supposed to happen. Instead of like click and then wait. Then the screen freezes up for a couple minutes. And then finally something happens. I was way overdue for a laptop, but I did go into the office and it was weird because I don't know. It was only the second time I've been in the office since we got back from Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels so weird and empty. It feels kind of creepy, and I didn't see anyone in my department. I saw some people in other departments and kind of walking down the hall, but not like, I don't know. It's strange.
I got a new Chromebook semi recently, which I really like that one because like not only can you download just apps on it, but you can also like you can bend it back and then it just becomes this like basically a tablet. It
becomes a tablet.
So
it's
like,
got a touchscreen too. So
I basically have a drawing tablet now.
Fancy.
Yeah, we've got like three Chromebooks that are all pretty similar, and I just like kind of like that Lenovo Chromebook, that particular model.
Yeah, it's nice.
I think all three of them are the same model, but you and Mom both have ones that are silver, and then I have one that's white, and Henry uses it a lot. But I don't know. It's weird. Like right now, Chromebooks are something that are in short supply.
Yeah,
hard to find because of the situation around us. It's weird to think about like all the things that no one really anticipated being in short supply that are now, like Chromebooks and bicycles and flour and I don't know.
Yeah,
flour is a lot easier to find now, and like toilet paper used to be that way, but there's still some random things that like you go to buy it and they're like, oh no, you can't buy that, it's all sold out.
There was a time when this pandemic was just about like washing hands and toilet paper.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
And I know I've said this on the podcast many times, but the weird thing about the whole thing is just not knowing when this is going to be over. Like next year at this time, is it going to be the same or is it going to be better? Hopefully it'll be better.
There was a while where like this was only going to last like 2 weeks. Like we were just like, oh, let's just self-quarantine for 2 weeks and then everything will be fine.
Well, I don't think we ever believed the whole thing was going to go away in 2 weeks. We just thought
like maybe like a month or a couple of
like
months.
We needed to self-quarantine for 2 weeks and then we could...
Yeah.
You know, be a little more normal. But I never thought the pandemic was going on. But I probably did believe, like, at some point that it would be, you know, in 2 months, maybe it'll sort of blow over.
Yeah,
everyone just sort of locks down for 2 months.
I was like, I feel like it's going to go, like, into summer. And then everyone's like, what?
Yeah, well, and there were a lot of people early on that were like, well, you know, usually, like, with flus and that type of virus, they don't do as well when the weather warms up. So maybe when the weather warms up, it'll all kind of...
People were still saying that by the time it got to, like, places that were in the equator.
But now what they're saying is the weather is about to get cold again, so maybe it's going to get worse, which is not great.
Yeah.
There's so many weird conspiracies about COVID, like... Heat kills COVID. The COVIDs are caused by cell towers.
5G towers.
I guess anytime, like, any sort of world event happens,
there's
always going to be conspiracy
theories.
I mean, sunshine
and heat do help because the virus can't survive outside of someone long in the heat.
Yeah, and like in a
it just
hot
has
car,
to be super
like,
hot.
Yeah.
Wait,
well,
I just
the sunshine
realized.
Will. Like, they won't. Like, it doesn't. One thing they found is it doesn't exist on surfaces as much as at first they feared. Hmm. So, like, even, you know. I think initially they were like, oh, well, you know, there were some people who would, like, when they buy groceries at the store, they would, like, keep them in their garage for a couple of days and, like, quarantine their groceries or, like, wash off all their groceries. And now they're saying, you don't have to do that. You don't have to, like, quarantine your mail or your groceries because the virus doesn't exist on a surface in most situations. So let's do some news.
Now your tomorrow morning's headlines tonight.
So one thing that is exciting that is happening in 2020 is it does appear that the vampire bats are on the way.
Very
ominous.
Oh,
yeah. I just remember that this pandemic started with bats.
Yes. Thousands of years ago, the United States was home to many vampire bats. Fossils of vampire bats were found in California, Texas, Florida, Arizona, and other states, dating from about 5,000 to 30,000 years ago.
So, like, the hot states.
But then the winters got cooler and the bats all went down to, like, Central and South America. But guess what?
They're coming back because of global warming.
Coming back because of global warming. So the winters are getting warmer. And already they are starting to find vampire bats at the very southern part of Texas.
I feel like all of the, like, world emergencies are, like, collaborating with each other now.
Yeah. This is an article from, I don't remember where this is from, actually. Let me see if I can figure it out. I don't know. It's an article from the internet.
The
about
internet.
Vampire bats heading our direction. It says that vampire bats are social and gregarious animals that have coexisted with humans for a really long time, according to a scientist in a study. Her name's Antoinette Piaggio. She's a molecular ecologist with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We're not trying to portray these animals as something we should all be scared of. A few paragraphs later, though, here's how they describe vampire bats.
Oh, boy.
The only animals to feed solely on blood. Vampire bats are well-suited for their special meals. They can detect where blood is flowing closest to the surface of an animal's skin, recognize an individual animal's breathing so they can prey on it at night, and escape if the animal stirs by springing from all fours right into flight.
Yeah, it's nothing to be afraid of.
I feel like the writers of 2020...
I just want to go on a camping trip, doesn't it?
The writers
in South Texas?
No.
The writers of 2020 are just recycling the, like, murder hornets and the bat storylines.
Yeah, so vampire bats live entirely on blood. They suck blood.
And they're very calculated about sucking your blood at
night.
They
can suck blood from any animal that has blood. But usually they don't bite humans. Usually they bite cattle because it's easier to prey on cattle. And the biggest problem with them is that they do carry rabies, and so they can give cattle rabies.
So kill
the
cows.
Nothing to be afraid of.
Just rabid cows.
Rabid blood-sucking bats.
And then the cows that they gave rabies to.
Mm-hmm.
They say a very small part of the southern tip of Texas could currently be representing suitable habitat for vampire bats. So it's possible that the vampire bats could currently be spreading north. They are on their way. They also say that they could be going to Florida, and they suggest that hurricanes could be blowing the bats from Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula
into
Cuba and Florida.
Because there's hurricanes this year, too.
Man. So it's like a batacane. It's not a Sharknado. It's a Batacane.
Are the bats,
man,
like...
I feel like I'm going to, like, look back on this year and be like, man, that was an amazing
maybe
year.
Maybe the bats are, like, the final boss of 2020.
And they say, while vampire bats could perhaps settle in a sliver of southern Texas, there's no way to know if or how soon they might arrive. What they're doing is they're projecting based on what they think weather patterns are going to be over the next few decades and trying to figure out, like, how far before the vampire bats get here.
It just so feels weird. Like everything's just going on at once. So I don't know, but I don't know about this, but like, I feel like once it turns, like the moment it turns 2021, it's all just going to be like gone. Just like,
say that.
Like murder hornets, oh, they're just gone now. Or all these fires and stuff, they're just gone. COVID, just gone.
Vampire bats, no.
No, they just don't exist anymore.
It's just, where are you going to pretend that they don't exist?
All of us are really jinxing 2021.
They talk about a study that the U.S. Department of Agriculture did in 2017, where they examined more than 95,000 cattle to see if they had vampire bat bites. Guess how many they found?
I don't
how
know.
Many did they examine?
95,000.
Okay, then they found 94,999.
Close. They found zero.
Ah, okay.
Can you imagine being the person that did this study, though, and you're like, well, that's 94,112. Still haven't found any. I'm going to keep going.
I can't imagine, like, cows being, like, rabid. Like, cows are pretty chill animals.
Yeah. I don't know what a rabid cow is going to do. At the very end of the article, it says vampire bats do pose a substantial risk in terms of their ability to spread rabies, and they are more abundant now than ever before. In Latin America, they are the main cause of rabies outbreaks in people. But on the whole, it's rare to be bitten by vampire bats. Usually what happens is they get rabies from infected livestock. So watch out for the vampire bats. Another thing we have to thank the year 2024.
Also watch out for the vampire cows, potentially.
And vampire cows.
Yep. And speaking of 2020... I would like to introduce zombie storms.
The first headline, vampire bat, second zombie storms.
All right.
The headline is zombie storms are rising from the dead thanks to climate change.
Oh my gosh.
Basically what zombie storms are is like, so there's these awful like, so you know how there's like on the American East Coast, there's like all these like horrible tropical storms and hurricanes. Mm-hmm. Well, yep. Once they die out, a lot of them are going to come back. So that's fun.
Yes.
I feel like the joke's getting a bit old now.
Yeah. Guys behind 2020, you can stop now.
We get it.
So we have all these storms brewing out there in the Atlantic. They start to get stronger. And then for the most part, it used to be they would just go away after a certain period of time.
Yeah, but now a couple of them are just like coming back.
Coming back from the dead.
Thank you.
Because 2020.
Thank you for this.
Yes.
Okay. Zombie storms, which regain strength after originally petering out, are the newest addition to the year 2020. These undead weather anomalies are becoming more common thanks to climate change. Because of 2020, we now have zombie tropical storms. Welcome back to the land of the living, Tropical Storm Paulette, the National Weather Service wrote on Twitter.
So the Tropical Storm Paulette that everyone thought was dead and gone is coming back from the dead and terrorizing people.
Okay, according to the article, It strengthened from a Category 1 hurricane to a Category 2 hurricane, then died off. Then it came back as a tropical storm, which is nice.
Yeah.
And apparently this is a thing before, but it's becoming way more common because of global warming. Because, like, hurricanes normally, like, survive in warmer weather.
Mm-hmm.
How do we
this summer has been really strange because I know we talked about when we were planning our trip to Alabama about how they name the storms, and all the Atlantic storms are named with a, you know, they start at A and they go to Z, and then they, you know, name them, alternate between a girl name and a boy name until you get to Z. This is only the second year since they've been doing this they've run out of names.
I thought this was like 2017.
So when they run out of names on the alphabet, they start with the Greek alphabet. And this week we had rain from Tropical Storm Beta. Tropical Storm Beta was the first Greek alphabet storm to reach the shore.
Dang. See, I thought
So they've gotten way further through the storms than they ever have, in at least since they've been doing this.
I thought all the storms was like 2017s. They're stealing 2017's, no pun intended, thunder.
Well, 2020 doesn't want to be like the bottom of the list in any bad category.
But 2020 has
it seems like they are.
No, they're the top of the list in every bad category.
Oh, you, yeah, okay.
2020 took, like, the crazy, like, insane
it's
election
like the Spanish
for 2016.
Flu. Also, it's an election year, of course. So that's...
Yeah. Always fun.
Yeah, and also, it took the storms from 2017. It's just recycling everything.
Yeah.
Oh, also, apparently, Hurricane Laura strengthened from a Category 1 to a Category 4 storm because it picked up the energy from the warm Gulf, which, by the way, the Gulf is apparently, like, just getting super warm now.
Yeah. That's part of the problem, is the warm weather apparently causes the storms to be stronger than they would be otherwise, because it just...
Yeah.
It generates a, you know, the air travels a lot, I don't know, more powerfully, I guess, as it warms up.
Fun yeah. stuff.
What about you, Will? Do you have an exciting and uplifting story for us?
All right. I have a pretty 2020 brand one, but this one's on a positive note. It says, any breed could do it. Dogs might be a COVID tester's best friend.
That was the wrong drop, wasn't it? Oh, yeah, that was the right drop.
It was the right drop. It's not actually a Maisie update, but it is a dog story.
But it said any breed, so maybe Maisie.
Maisie's, like, right across from here.
You know, I don't think Maisie would be good at this. I think lots of breeds could do it, but Maisie is not the best hunting dog, because sometimes when I'm feeding her food and, like, I drop it, like, 2 feet away, she can't find it. I don't think her sense of smell. I think Boston Terriers, like, they have such a small snout that their sense of smell is not really great.
Any breed can do it. So.
I know, but I'm just going to say any breed, just not Maisie.
Not the Maisie breed.
It yes. says, around the world, from UK to Finland, Spain, Brazil, Lebanon, and Australia, teams of researchers are training dogs to sniff out COVID-19. And some say the idea of training hundreds of thousands of canine to noses to check for coronavirus is not as far-fetched, I get it, as it may sound.
I don't think that was even meant as a pun, but okay.
Maybe it was.
I don't know. It says, yeah, scientists say that any breed, in theory, could be trained, and canines were not sniffing the virus itself, but rather telltale volatile chemicals produced when the virus infects cells and released by the body.
I think that's really interesting that, like, they don't... It's not like they can smell the virus, but they can smell what the virus does to cells.
Yeah, that's weird. It also says the chemicals should be produced whether or not an infected person has symptoms, and only if the virus is active, suggesting that unlike current lab techniques, dogs are unlikely to pick up dead virus. I didn't know you could still carry, like, the virus when it's dead.
Yeah, so one of the things that happens when you have COVID, you know, your body produces antibodies, and it breaks down the virus. So you have the virus in your system, but when you do a test for the virus... Even if you're not, you no longer have the disease, the virus will show up as, like, dead RNA. And so that's one of the reasons why they, early on in the disease, they were saying that, that people were concerned that maybe people weren't building up immunities because they would test and they would get through the disease and then they would test months later and they were still testing positive. But it's because you're getting a positive test from the dead virus in someone's system.
Does your body just keep, like, dead viruses forever? Like,
I don't know. Maybe I guess virus? They just hang around for a while.
It says results from Grandjean and his colleagues, which are yet to be peer-reviewed, show sweat samples from COVID patients were correctly identified by 8 dogs at least 83% of the time, with some making a correct identification in 100% of the trials they underwent.
Those 100% dogs, they're really good.
And he said... Grandjean said, we can have one dog per retirement house that is trained, and this dog will be able to every single morning to check everybody just by walking by. His team plans to work with a French organization to provide COVID sniffing dogs to care homes.
Dang.
That's actually really good, though, because, you know, one of the places where they've had the most devastated impact is like the care homes or nursing homes for old people.
Yeah. And
that's where they've had all the deaths. So if you had, like, a dog at the door, you could, like, be screening visitors when they come in to see, like, if they have it. Because it
can
says,
dogs get COVID?
Some report that they can, but they in the article it says that the dogs can sniff it out even if the person is asymptomatic. So even if they don't know they have it, the dog can tell that they have the virus.
That's
so
really cool.
You could keep the virus from coming into care homes. I think the other place where this would be really useful is at airports. so oh, you yeah. can have them screening passengers on airplanes.
Yeah.
And they, I think they say in the article, and maybe you were going to get to this, but it wouldn't be like the only thing you would do. You would just use the dog to screen people, and then you would know who needs to be tested. So they would confirm it with a test.
I feel like this is one of the reasons why dogs are like some of the most ideal house pets, because like you can actually use them for stuff. Like,
yeah. Dogs are great. And the thing about dogs is because of the way that they've been bred and evolved, like they really like to be useful.
Yeah.
Like, they like to help people and they really enjoy being trained and learning how to do stuff and being and working. So it's pretty cool. I think it's a cool development. And it could be like actually really useful when you think about like how to control and contain the virus.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, I like that. Let's do a segment we haven't done in a little while.
What you listening to?
I don't think you like it.
Well, why not? I like this new generation of music.
So a little while ago, maybe like a couple months ago, William and I went through our top 10 albums of all time. One thing that happened, I think, starting about the middle of the summer and going strong till now is Will and Henry have been, like, super into music and, like, yeah. listening yeah. to new music. I think especially Henry. I think William was into music maybe a little bit before Henry, but Henry has really come on strong with, like, listening to lots of different albums and
yeah.
figuring out what fun. He likes.
I also convinced Henry to be a fan of The National.
And Henry, oh, yeah. yeah, he used to not like them at all and say they were boring.
Yeah, but, I feel like I had to work my way into it, yeah. like starting with their more accessible stuff.
Yeah. But Henry did not get a chance to go over his top 10 albums, so we're going to do mm-hmm. that now. And then me and William, or William and I, if we want to be grammatical at all, we'll get a chance to kind of, you know, comment on it yeah. and give our opinions as well. But I'm interested to know what Henry's top 10 albums are.
One thing about this was like, after you guys did that podcast segment, I tried to make my own top 10, and I feel like this is the reason I started listening to more music. I was like, wait, I don't have that many albums here. Like, how much?
Yeah.
I just didn't.
So maybe that's one enough. Good thing about making lists
mm-hmm.
is it will cause you to think more about, you know, the Rolling Stone magazine just came out with an updated top 500 albums of all time.
Hmm.
So, this is your top 10 albums of all time.
Yeah.
You can compare them to, like, Rolling Stone magazine's top 10 albums of all time.
I guess
I could. Know that yours are better.
I would honestly read through that entire list.
I don't think I have a 10 for some reason.
I feel like I can't quite say I've completely branched out in terms of music, because in my top 10, there's only one album that's not indie.
So, we're going to count them down, right? 10 to 1?
Yeah. Number 10. So speaking of not indie, number 10 is The Wall by Pink Floyd. This one's like...
There we go. This is another Brick in the Wall, part 2.
Yes.
This song was popular when I was a kid, and it was controversial.
Was it?
Because parents didn't like it. Like all these children singing about not wanting to be educated, which is not what the song's really about.
Yeah. Anyways...
It was probably the biggest hit that Pink Floyd had in terms yeah. of, like, a radio hit.
I heard good stuff about what album.
Anyway.
So, Pink Floyd The Wall, kind of a weird album for you to be getting into. Although, I feel like everybody that listens to rock music has a moment when they listen to Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
I don't mean that in a bad way. I kind of like Pink Floyd myself.
You should probably pause that.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. But, basically, I really like it. Like, initially I thought it was an okay album, then I listened to it again and I realized that there's this, like, whole complex story.
Yep.
It's really good. By the way, all the songs that are being played are from a playlist for, like, my favorite songs off of different albums. So, yeah, my favorite song on that album is probably Another Brick in the Wall, Part 2.
I like the song Comfortably Numb.
That's another super popular one.
I like the song Mother.
Oh, yeah, it's also pretty good. It has some really good songs.
What's the one? Goodbye, Blue Sky? I like that song, too. Anyway.
Number 9 is Contra by Vampire Weekend, and I know this will annoy Will because it's his number 1 album, but I put it at number 9.
I mean, you've probably listened to more albums than I have at this point.
In December, drinking. This is the first song on the album, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really good. I like the use of xylophone, and like I like how electronic this album is.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone credits like Modern Vampires of the City as their best. And Modern Vampires of the City is like a masterpiece, but this I love this.
Man,
album
this
so
list
much.
Is really gonna annoy you.
Rolling Stone's top 500 albums of all time. Only Modern Vampires of the City made the list. And some Weekend fans were kind of mad about that.
This might be a bit of a spoiler, but I put Modern Vampires as the best Vampire Weekend song on this list, so I'm sorry, Will.
Wait, Modern Vampires is the best Vampire Weekend song?
Album.
Album.
Oh, yeah.
That's my song.
I mean, they have to... Modern Vampires of the City, like, is... Like, I think people
it's
do
really
respect
good.
It as, like, one of the best
I
albums ever.
I feel like it
ever.
Had to grow on me.
I personally prefer Contra a bit more, but...
Yeah. Number 8. Okay, for number 8, I put Boxer by The National. I feel like all of these, it kind of pains me to put them this low, which actually it is pretty high still. But, yeah,
it's
number 8
album.
Is Boxer
really like
by The National.
Here we go.
This is probably my favorite song off the album. It's called Mistaken for Strangers, and, like, it's just really good.
It is a good song.
The entire album's about, like... Just like, maybe turn it down, but I feel like the entire album's about like just learning to cope with different kinds of things. Like Fake Empire, the first song is about like just like taking a while to just relax and forget all your troubles, and like Green Gloves is really beautiful. It's like about like coping with loss by like sort of becoming the person you're missing.
Yeah,
the entire album's really good.
I've always thought of The National as like if Coldplay was actually really good.
I think that a lot of times The National, like their songs are about like alienation and modern life,
yeah,
and
actually,
anxiety and
this
things
song,
like that.
This song, Mistaken for Strangers, is about like how it's about like I think I'm going to look up the lyrics for this part. There's like a lyric that describes the whole song really well.
The National is a really consistently great band.
Yeah. It's taking forever to load.
I've got it up. Do you want to look at mine?
Oh, yeah. Okay. It says, this is like just some lyrics. It's, they wouldn't want to watch another uninnocent, elegant fall into the unmagnificent life of adults. It's basically about like remembering your childhood and how like great it was, but like now it's just like, everything just become stale, I guess.
Yeah, you're all grown up, and it's just not as great as you thought it was going to be.
Such a great song.
Yeah.
And
The National's a good band
album.
To listen to when you're going through a midlife crisis, which is way far away for you boys, but you can listen to it.
I still really love their albums.
Yeah.
There's going to be more The National later. But Number seven is Vampire Weekend by Vampire Weekend.
Lots of Vampire Weekend on here.
Yep.
I approve.
I really love this one. Like,
this one's a classic.
Yeah, it is. Even more than, like, Contra, or Follow the Bride, because it just has, like, it's the first album they're all, like, they'd all just graduated from college, and you can just feel that, like, it's so feel-good. I love it.
When this album first came out, I bought it, and I remember we immediately, like, our family started listening to it.
Yeah.
Like, in the car. So it's probably, like, something that. You guys all grew up, because you were kids at the time, littler kids.
I might be, like, seeing their first two albums through nostalgia goggles, but...
It's just such a great album. It's so, like, simple, but everything just works together really well.
It has a really unique style, too. Like, I don't think I've listened to any other band that blends, like...
Classical with, like... African
with
bongo
like,
stuff.
Kind of like indie punk
also,
rock.
Yeah.
Like
it just has it's just a really amazing album.
Number six
is this is gonna annoy you, Will. Modern Vampires of the City by Vampire Weekend.
That doesn't annoy me, that's a great album.
This song in specific is like one of my favorite songs of all time. Called Diane Young.
Which sort of sounds like Dying Young.
Well, yeah, I think Ezra Koenig, the writer and singer for Vampire Weekend, said that, like, no one would want a song called Dying Young, so he made it sound Diane Young. Like,
yeah, and I think the thinking behind it, what I heard, and I don't know if this is actually true or something he came up with, but it's like, imagine there's a health spa that is called the Diane Young Health Spa.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like a lot of times, like, too many biblical references can be, like, really jarring in albums, but, like, this one does it really well.
Yeah, a lot of references to the Old Testament.
It has a really good sound to it, like...
Yeah.
Had to grow on me, though.
I really like how Modern Vampires of the City thinks about, like... It's also kind of about life, but, like, going through, like third world countries or stuff like that, or, like... Ezra Koenig is, like, Jewish, like, so he thinks a lot about, like... Judaism and Christianity and stuff like that.
Just a lot of stuff like that. It's really, really good.
It's an amazing album, yeah.
Are we on 6 or 5?
And it's also, like, really well produced. We're on number 5 now. Number 5! Number 5 for me is Ga 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 by Spoon. Weird title. This one's really good.
I love this song.
This song made an appearance in the Spider-Man Homecoming movie, and I was really happy.
That was great.
This is actually their most popular song, called The Underdog, which apparently almost didn't make it onto the album, but, yeah, this entire album is just amazing. Like, it's really well done, like, for, like, post stuff, like, editing and stuff. And it has such a great sound, like, in between, you can hear, like, people, like, putting down, picking up different instruments and just lo-fi stuff like that, and I really like that.
Don't make me a target.
Actually,
it's a really good
I haven't updated this, but I think, yeah. I think my favorite off the album might actually not be The Underdog. I think my favorite's the closer called Black Like Me. It's about, like, it's kind of a double story where, like, you can interpret it one way, but also another way. Like, it's either about going to a shoe store and getting your shoes repaired, or it's about finding love. It's really good. Like,
that song's kind
of
a fan
favorite.
It's
such an amazing closer, honestly. Yeah.
That's a really, I think, number 4. Might be their most well-known album. It's a really good one.
Okay, so number 4, another Spoon album, is They Want My Soul. Once again, really, really well mixed and stuff.
It's my second favorite album ever.
Okay, I feel like this entire album is just, like, just really well done and, like, well mixed and stuff, and I feel like, I feel like that's a bit loud.
That's fine, you can talk about it.
I think Britt Daniels, the singer and songwriter, said that it was overall their loudest album. Yeah, I really love this album because, like, it's just so great. And it actually took me a while to figure out, like, the common theme between all of them, and apparently it's, like, about, like, just getting used to being, like, somewhat well-known.
I think the theme of They Want My Soul is more, like, it could be that. I think there's also a theme of, like, having a relationship that's kind of falling apart.
Yeah.
Like, that song is literally, like, about, like, all right, you need to, like, get better in this relationship or else we're done.
Yeah. And especially, I really love the closer. It's just, it's definitely one of my favorite closers. It's called New York Kiss, and it's about, like, looking back on a relationship and, like, even though the relationship didn't work out, you can accept that you had some really great memories from it and, like... I don't know, all the songs are just beautiful on that album.
That's one of those albums where, like, I have a different favorite every week. Or, like,
it's really hard to choose a favorite song, honestly.
Henry's pointed this out before, but that song opens with the line, I've been losing sleep.
Or the album. And then it ends with
I Say Goodnight.
Yeah.
Which is perfect. I don't know if that's intentional or not, but...
Anyways.
Are we on number 3?
Yes. Number 3! My number 3 is Illinois by Sufjan Stevens. Or Illinois. It depends on... Sometimes it's spelled differently.
Or Illinois by Sufjan Stevens.
Yes.
It's Sufjan Stevens, Illinois.
Oh, yeah, it is Sufjan Stevens.
That's right.
Forgot.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
It looks like Sufjan, but it's Sufjan. This is a good song.
Mm-hmm.
From a good album.
I think this album might be, like, too dramatic for me to handle, but...
Yeah. I feel like this entire album is just genius, like, all the way through, just genius and beautiful, like, and it's kind of annoying that it's number 3 for me, I don't know why, like, instead of number 1, although there's some great albums on here, and in particular the song I found, like, the most beautiful, because it's about, like, okay, the entire album's about, like, linking his personal experiences to real places, and, like, the fact that, like, the entire album's about, like, real things and places and, like, different holidays and stuff in Illinois just makes it all feel so, like, I don't know, just feel so real. And it's just, it's so well done. Like, especially the song Chicago, like, it's about Sufjan Stevens growing up in, like, the place of Chicago and how it was, like, an escape from all his worries and stuff. It's just, it's just so amazing.
Hunter, I think you need to start writing lyrics.
Yeah. But, like, oh, also, another thing I noticed, like, after the, like, truly beautiful songs, like, the opener concerning the UFO sightings near Highland, Illinois, or something like that. By the way, this song is really, has some really ridiculously long titles, which I'll get to later. But, like, after that song, and which is just a beautiful, like, piano ballad, like, there's an entire instrumental song after that to let just sink in. And then after, it also happens after the song Kazimir Pulaski Day, which is a super depressing song, by the way.
But it's got really good banjo, though.
Yeah, and it just gives you, like, a moment to just, like, process it. It's
that's my favorite song really of the album, good. Actually. Mm-mm. I like that song.
It's, like, my second favorite. By the way, this one's the, like, instrumental one after...
You want to play
this
it?
One's the instrumental song after the first song, and the full title is The Black Hawk War, or How to Demolish an Entire Civilization, Still Feel Good About Yourself in the Morning, or We Apologize for the Inconvenience, but You're Going to Have to Leave Now, or I Have Fought the Big Knives and Will Continue to Fight Them Until They Are Off Our Lands.
Yep.
Dang.
Also very long title. The Black Hawk War.
Yeah, it also knows that.
Number two.
Okay, number two. This used to be number one, or, like, tied for number one. I had to go back and forth a lot. But number two, I decided, was Challengers. Can I say the name on the podcast?
We have before.
Yeah.
Challengers by the New Pornographers.
Their songs are way cleaner than their band name.
Yeah. That's true. But the album Challengers, like... It's just such an amazing album. It's more of a grower album, but, like, I feel like every song on there is just a masterpiece. Well, like, it's up for, like, one song, but that one's still, like, amazing.
I think that one might be, like, every person in the family's, like, one of their favorite
albums.
What song
do you want to play?
Probably My Rights Versus Yours. It's really hard to choose a favorite.
It's the first song on it.
I feel like it's kind of hard to just listen to, like, a clip of one of these songs.
Yeah, they build so well, and, like...
Not all of them build, but, like, a lot of them start out really simple and then get super intense.
If no one minds, I'm just going to go through every song and explain why it's a masterpiece. Marriage Versus Yours is, like, a beautiful song, either about a divorce or discrimination. It's hard to tell. and there's, like, an amazing transition between that and all the old showstoppers, which is also amazing. Then, like... I don't know, every song... I feel like Myriad Harbor especially had to grow on me because it's just, like, such a jarring way of singing, but it's just such a fun song about New York. I don't know, actually, the entire thing's just beautiful. I especially love Adventures in... Like, especially Adventures in Solitude and... where is it? Go Places. Those are really beautiful.
What I love about the New Pornographers is I feel like they have, like... They have, I think, 8 members right now, and...
Yeah.
There's a lot, like, of members, like, leave and join and stuff. But I feel like with each one of their albums, like, every single member, like, shines.
Yeah. Now, I think Challengers was the one where Catherine Calder joined as an official member.
Yeah, not just as a touring member.
Yeah. But I think, like, the second to last song, Adventures in Solitude, is about, like, it's just an amazing, beautiful song about, like, one person who overcame depression talking to someone who's currently going through depression.
Yeah.
But after that, it doesn't even end. Like, I feel like this just makes it even more beautiful. Like, after that is The Spirit of Giving, which is about, like, it's just a really, really good closer.
Mm-hmm.
However, that is not number one. Okay. Number one is Trouble Will Find Me by The National.
I was waiting for this one to show up. That's Dad's favorite album, too.
Yeah. And I know why.
Oh, it's a really good album.
I love this song.
Yeah.
This is one of those songs that starts out great and gets even better.
Yeah, I'm gonna look at the album and like go through like the highlights. Okay, so
every song, is a highlight.
Yeah, that's true. Number one. Okay, I feel like to preface, like every single song like I loved initially, but then like each one, like I slowly realized with each one individually, like they're all like masterpieces. I feel like the first song is called "I Should Live in Salt," and it was already beautiful until like watching the documentary "Mistaken for Strangers" and knowing the context behind it. And it's like a song about how he shouldn't have left his brother behind and like apologizing about it. Then "Demons," like it's a surprisingly beautiful song. It's one of the more fun songs on there, which it doesn't have that many fun songs, but it's about just being an awkward teen. Then "Don't Swallow the Cap" is about like just having to face like just like death and whether or not there's an afterlife. Then there's "Fireproof," which I'll just skim over that one. It's really good though. Then number five, "See You Love," is like probably like the most fun off of there.
I love the album title drop on that one.
Oh yeah,
too.
The title drop just gives me chills every time. Actually, the entire album just gives me chills all the way through.
There's a part where they pause and go, "If I stay here, trouble
will find."
I love
me.
That part.
It's really good. Then. At this point, I'm just skimming through the different songs, but this is the last time, like, just, I'm pretty sure it's, like, the middle, like, right in the middle of the album. It just, man, it just, like...
It builds and builds until it's just, like, devastating at the
end.
Yeah.
"Graceless" is an amazing song that opens up the second half about taking antidepressants. kind of a less, like, deep song, but it's really good.
Is that song about taking antidepressants?
Yeah. The first lyrics are
I think all of these songs are sort of
tasteless.
I think all of these songs are sort of open to interpretation. Mm-hmm. But this is what it means to Henry.
And they've slipped. "I Need My Girl" is the most popular song off of the album. I'm not exactly sure why.
Yeah, a lot of people really like that song.
And then
song.
"Pink Rabbits" is, I've already mentioned, it's just an amazing song all the way through. Like, it has great piano. And I think, like, I finally figured out what it's about. I think it's about, like, you broke up, then, like, the person who broke up with you comes back, and you're like, yeah, I think you're right.
For some reason, I really like the line on there that's like, I was a white girl in a crowd of white girls in the park.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, I don't get what that means, but it's really, all of the
lyrics.
Like,
I was a TV host version of a man with a broken heart.
I was a television version of a person with a broken heart.
We've memorized all the lyrics, just completely.
Yeah. Amazing song. And then, like, at the end, just... Oh my gosh. The last song is about, like, remembering, like, I feel like the entire album's about, like, looking back on previous relationships and being, like, yeah, and, like, seeing why they didn't work out, and, like, finding the one that did work out, but, like, the last song is hard to find. It's about finding the one that did work out and, like, wanting to go back to that, but then realizing that that person would be hard to find, and it's just amazing.
Yeah, I think, like, I think this was also my number one record, but the one thing I noticed, like, when I first started listening to it, I would always listen to the first half of the record because that's where all the big, like, rock songs are and the big singles are. But I think the longer I listened to it, the more, like, I started to like the second half with the quieter songs even better than the first half, which was interesting.
Yeah.
"Graceless." Okay, songs like "Graceless" or "Don't Swallow the Cap," like, I actually remember sometimes I would have, like, some kind of tough anxiety in the middle of the night for whatever reason. And then I would listen to songs on that album and feel better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That works. So good. It works that way for me too. It's like a really relaxing album for me. Like, not that the songs are necessarily relaxing, but they put me in a good headspace.
And this is kind of true with like all of like the top three albums on my list. But I feel like this album is just like, if I listen to it once, then I have to wait a while, like, to listen to it again, because it's like eating a really rich cake. Like, you don't want to eat it, like, all the time, yeah. I guess. I don't know. It just, yeah, it's just really good.
I will say, if you're new to The National, then "Sleep Well, Beast" might be a better...
Or "Boxer." One of those. Yeah. They're more accessible. Specifically, the
song. Or
songs...
even "High Violet." That's also a popular one.
Yeah, but, yeah, "Trouble Will Find Me" is not a good starting point, but I think it's
their
best album.
Amazing, though.
Yeah.
I think it's in my, like, top five.
Well, now we know.
I feel like I should do honorable mentions here. just a couple of quick honorable mentions.
The other Vampire Weekend album.
These aren't, like, These aren't like an aesthetic order, but I feel like my first honorable mention is Transatlanticism by Death Cab for Cutie, which it really pains me not to put this in the top 10, but that one's also beautiful, specifically the song Transatlanticism. Another one that I really like is Give Up by the Postal Service, which has two of the same members. Which that one's just like, I think that might be my favorite indie Tronica album, which there weren't any in the top 10, except for Debatably Contra. But yeah, that one's also really good.
All right. So now we know Henry's top 10 albums of all time. Yep. So thanks for that. There's only one last thing to do on the podcast, and that is...
three words for you. Treat yourself.
Treat yourself.
Treat yourself.
So for Treat Yourself this week, I know I've mentioned on the podcast several times that one of the things I've been doing during the pandemic is riding my bike just to get out of the house and do a bike ride. From our house, there are three different 7-Elevens that are bikeable in three different directions. And sometimes I'll ride my bike to 7-Eleven, get a drink, drink my drink, and then come home. When I was at 7-Eleven recently, I noticed they have their own brand of candy and other treats called 7-Select. In the past, I haven't always had a good experience with 7-Select. But I found these gummy candies. These are gummy candies that are sort of inspired by Mexican flavors. Mm. There is, and is this pronounced tamarind or tamarind? I never know.
I don't know.
I'm going to find out right
tamarind.
Now.
Tamarind. I guess tamarind.
I probably
should have
found out before the podcast, but here we go.
Tamarind cherry. I'm guessing. I'm just going to guess that, I guess.
Looking it up. How to pronounce... here we go.
Tamarind.
Tamarind.
Hey, got it.
So, this is tamarind chamoy. You know what chamoy is?
Oh, I thought it was tamarind cherry.
Chamoy is like this kind of sour, sweet, like liquid thing that they put on like fruit and stuff.
I have a bad feeling about that.
Tamarind is like really, it's like sweet, but it's also very sour. So this one's going to be sweet, tart, and spicy. Then we have pineapple habanero gummy candy. So pineapple-y and spicy. And then mango chamoy, which is also, I mentioned chamoy a minute ago, but this is mango flavor. So I don't know if we're going to like these or not. I think I will like them because I tend to like the spicy, sour, and sweet Mexican candy flavor. But I don't know if you boys will. Which one should we try first? The tamarind chamoy, the pineapple habanero, or the mango chamoy?
I feel like the mango chamoy.
All right. Maybe the safest of all three bets.
Maybe. I don't know. Probably habanero pineapple last.
Okay. All right. Passing these around. This is mango chamoy.
It actually smells kind of good.
Oops. What do you guys think of the mango chamoy?
It's really good, and it tastes like a normal gummy candy, but also, instead of being, like, spicy, it just, like, kind of hurts your tongue.
Yeah, that
was
a little weird.
It's got just a little bit of spice, not very much. I thought it was delicious.
Yum, 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 yum.
I was wondering if I was, like, the only person who noticed that. But they taste a lot like peach rings.
Yeah, they do.
It says, sweet mango spicy chamoy. There's not a ton of spice in it,
so. Yeah, it just kind of, like... they're pretty good.
Mango and peach are actually kind of similar, like artificial flavors.
So next we have the other chamoy.
This is the tamarind chamoy.
Mm, yeah.
Which should be a little sour, too.
What is tamarind?
It's actually like a bean. They come in like these bean pods, but like in a lot of in like South Asia and Mexico and Latin American countries, they use it to make things kind of... like sweet and sour at the same time.
Okay. I'm a little hesitant on this.
What do you guys think of the tamarind chamoy flavored gummy candy?
It's very similar to the other one, but slightly more sour. And it did that thing where it just kind of stung your tongue a bit.
It reminds me of those, I remember when we went to Mexico City, we had these, they had these one candies that were this like, these like red balls. Mm-hmm. Kind of had like a soft coating.
I feel like those were worse though.
They were kind of chewy.
I thought those were pretty good.
I like them, but I like these.
It reminds
these.
Me of that. That's
I
delicious.
Think these are also delicious.
Yum, 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 yum. Delicioso.
I'm giving these an okay.
They're all shaped like sour gummy bears.
Henry gives it an okay.
Okay, now here's the one I'm concerned about.
Pineapple habanero. This has got little gummy candies with like devil horns and fire in the background and a volcano. So I guess it's supposed to be really spicy. Let's try the pineapple habanero. So habanero is one of the spiciest hot peppers, at least of the ones that people actually eat on a regular basis.
I don't mean to jinx it, but I doubt it will be that spicy.
I don't know. We'll see.
No, it won't. It kind of smells good.
I've got a little bit of a bite to them.
Yeah, I feel like these don't taste spicy, but they actually have that spicy feeling instead of like the last ones.
A little bit of a slow burn bite.
They do taste. Yeah. They just taste like pineapple, but
yeah, just pineapple flavor.
I think it's okay. Wasn't as bad.
I'll give it, William.
I'll give it a delicious. I mean, this is just like pretty regular candy.
Yum 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 pretty yum. Good. Delicioso.
I also think it's delicious. I like all of these. Let's rank them. Which one do you like the best? I think I might have liked the tamarind chamoy the best.
I guess either the tamarind or the peach ring. Or the
from top to bottom,
ones.
I'm just going to do the ones that we tried first to the ones we tried last.
Yeah, like, so mango first, mango, then tamarind, then pineapple.
Cut worse
I think
worse.
I like tamarind, then mango, then pineapple.
Oh, now I'm starting to get that like...
it's a got a little bit of a burn,
that,
right?
Yeah. That, like, no, now I'm starting to get the little bit of pepper taste.
Yeah.
The pineapple was a bit spicier pepper. Than the other ones.
I feel like if you ate this whole bag, you probably would feel the burn, you know, because it would cumulatively, it'd be more
these
spicy.
Are all right.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is Treat Yourself, and that is our podcast. Thanks, boys, for being on the podcast today.
Thank you.
And thank you to everyone who's listening. If you are listening, let us know. You can email us at talkdadpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us at talkdadpodcast on Instagram and Facebook. You can also find us at talkdadpodcast.com, where you can download and stream all of our episodes from 1 to 218. If you like the podcast and you want to help us out, there's two things you could do to be nice. You could tell a friend. And then the other thing you could do would be to leave us a 5-star review. If you subscribe, rate, and review us, that helps other people be able to find the podcast as well on the algorithms that are used by the different hosts of podcasts. This has been a lot of fun, and we will see you later. Time for